Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. What if the healthy foods you're encouraged to eat could actually be hiding a toxic secret? Could some of the whole foods that we consume be unknowingly leading us down a pathway to illness? In today's eye-opening episode, we'll be joined by Sally Norton to dive into the fascinating and surprising world of toxic superfoods. We'll discuss how some so-called health foods might be causing a range of health issues, from anxiety and headaches to IBS, kidney stones, and chronic inflammation. Specifically, we'll uncover the science behind oxalates, naturally occurring compounds found in many superfoods like spinach and almonds, and how they might be silently affecting your health. Stay tuned. It all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is a renowned expert on dietary oxalates. She holds a nutrition degree from Cornell University and a Master of Public Health from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She has an impressive background in medical education and public health research, including managing a National Institutes of Health-funded program at UNC Medical School. Her journey was inspired by her own healing experience, and she's dedicated her career to promoting holistic healing practices within conventional medical care. Her best-selling book released last year is called Toxic Superfoods: How Oxalate Overload is Making You Sick and How to Get Better. And she just released the Data Companion to Toxic Superfoods. Welcome to the show, Sally Norton.
Oh, it's so wonderful to be with you. Thank you.
Great to have you on the show. As I said, when we talked earlier, the first thing I heard about you was a patient of mine struggled with several issues and regained her health after reading your book. So I said, I've got to have you on the show. I got to learn more. And for those who might not be familiar, what exactly are oxalates? Some people are scratching their head. What are they? Why are they problematic?
Yeah, most people have never heard the word. They assume it's a city in a foreign country. We're really not paying attention to oxalate. It's sad because they're in the foods we're eating. Oxalate is part of nature. We even make a little bit in our liver. So the body is aware of oxalate. You pee it out. Almost every time you pee, you're peeing out oxalic acid and these crystals that it forms. And it can form crystals there in the kidney and in the bladder and become these calcium oxalate crystals that become kidney stones. And what's interesting is so many things are interesting about oxalates, actually. But the big issue is that in our mindset in health and medicine is that the kidney stone is the only thing that oxalates cause, when in fact, we have little micro kidney stones stuck in our thyroid glands, our bone marrow, probably our brains, and all kinds of tissues through the body. It affects your connective tissue and all that. And it's right there sitting in spinach, almonds, cashews, peanuts, bran, quinoa, buckwheat, cassava, chia seeds, kiwi, all the stuff that we trust and is super popular at the moment.
Wow. And so how did you discover this? I guess you had a personal health journey and you discovered that oxalates were the root cause of your chronic health issues. Share more.
Yes. Unfortunately, I had to suffer nearly 50 years with problems before I figured this out. Because those of us who are trained in nutrition and public health and so on are misinformed about the fact that it's a lot bigger than the kidney stone problem. So we just dismiss it out of hand because we think we know what we're talking about. I was struggling with various problems that started in my youth. Around age 12, I started getting arthritis and back pain and fatigue. And in high school, I had trouble focusing on my studies. And the fatigue just got worse and worse. And I became a vegetarian in my late teens and vegan later. And none of those things helped. I just got sicker and more fatigued, brain fatigue, physical fatigue, food allergies, all kinds of things. Eventually, I had undiagnosed endometriosis and bleeding fibroids and needed surgery. And I had foot problems. I spent my 20s in crutches and wheelchairs and painkillers, connective tissue issues. None of that was in any way in my mind connected to my diet, but my mind was missing the boat. It turns out later on, I had a little attack of vulvar pain, which can be this burning, really evil pain. It makes it's like it stops you in your tracks. And my husband looked up online and found a foundation called the Vulvar Pain Foundation. And they teach a low oxalate diet to deal with pelvic pain. And that was a real head twister. I didn't quite get it. It was later on, 3 years later, as I became more aware of when I was eating oxalates, that I was starting to able to see the connection between the long suffering I had with arthritis and my food. But before, I didn't know enough about where oxalates were in my food to ever make that connection.
Wow. So you made the connection and then you did a U-turn. You drastically got rid of that. Did you see symptoms go away pretty quickly, or is it a lot of time for the body to rebuild?
Both. It's both at the same time. My big foods at that time were sweet potatoes as a daily staple and Swiss chard a couple nights a week, or typically at least once a week for years. I've been eating Swiss chard since I was a kid. And by eliminating those two foods and steering away from the kiwi and a few other little things, I overcame an impenetrable sleep problem within a week. My brain was waking up 29 times an hour, according to a very fancy, expensive sleep study. And for 3.5 years, we couldn't figure out why. It wasn't the SIBO that I suspected and treated for anyway, and all these other theories. It turned out it was because my brain was so poisoned by the oxalate and the sweet potatoes I was eating. And then other things got better. Within 6 months, my feet were finally able to function without shoes. I could wear high heels. They were acting like feet are supposed to act, but they hadn't been good since I was 19 years old. And at this point, I just turned 50 and I got my feet back.
Wow. For those listening, what are some symptoms that people should be aware of that may show that they've eaten too many oxalates?
Well, if it's an acute response, because it's the oxalate that's coming in fresh from the last few meals you've had, there's a 4-hour lag time before the peak gets in your bloodstream, because food travels from your stomach all the way through your intestinal tract in a day-long period. So if you have problems 4 hours after a meal with fatigue, difficulty falling asleep, irritability, change in mood, stomach pain, arthritis, hiccups, belching, bloating, all kinds of things can go wrong. And it plays out differently in different people.
I'm curious, is there a reliable test that people can take to measure their oxalate levels, or is it primarily based on symptomatology?
It has to be based on symptoms because the body is smart. It's not just a plastic dish. It's doing things intelligently with this load coming in from your stomach and intestines. It's coming into your blood circulation, affecting the blood cells, affecting the vascular tissue, coming straight into the liver, affecting liver function, and moving up from the liver to the heart, lungs, heart, and peripheral circulation. So lots of tissues have a chance to go, wait a minute, I'm getting poisoned. And so the system tries hard to keep the levels as low as it can in the blood and not overwhelm the kidneys. The kidney's job is to pull it out of the blood and let you pee it out. Some of us will see that as cloudy urine, because as that oxalate forms crystals in the urine, it can make the urine look cloudy. And people aren't aware of that. I had cloudy urine on and off since I was a teenager, and no one ever explained with my urinalysis that that was a symptom of potential health problems, especially oxalate-related health problems.
Now, you named a lot of things that people eat, they love, they've been told it's healthy, and it's part of their regular regimen. In your book, you share don't eat this, eat that approach of getting healthy. What are a few examples of some healthier food swaps for those that love what you mentioned not to eat?
One of the big ones is the spinach question, because spinach has been riding high as some kind of superhero, and they're wondering what to do instead of spinach or chard. And the truth is, almost every other green, arugula, watercress, all the lettuces, turnip tops, mosh, radicchio, all these things are fine. So it's real easy in the greens department to make a switch over from spinach. You can go down initially to those mesculine mixes that still have some spinach in them, because we really want to kind of sneak out of this hazardous toxic diet slowly, so you don't abruptly convince the body that it needs to deal with these crystals you have in your thyroid gland and your bone marrow and your brain. Right now, we wanted to just get used to having less coming in from each meal. So you can do this gradually. If you're into cashews and almonds and peanuts, if you want a nutty-like thing, the lowest thing to use instead are pumpkin seeds. And instead of the potatoes, you might do turnips and rutabaga. And I have a cookbook to help you figure out what the heck to do with those things, because most they're not on the like popular list. And so you may not even know what to do with these other things. Instead of sweet potatoes, you can use winter squashes. All the cucurbit family and the winter squash family is cucumbers, melons, all those are quite low. And white rice is a very good low oxalate grain. But if you're on a gluten-free diet and you're using buckwheat and quinoa and arrowroot and cassava, you need to find some other way to pull together your diet.
Right. You know, I can't stop but thinking about Popeye. You know, he gained those muscles from eating spinach, but I guess he was probably inflamed and sick on the inside, right?
Well, he didn't look so hot on the outside either. I wouldn't date the guy.
He was a little distorted, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Not the epitome of good health. That's right. Let me ask you, I get so many guests. I've been doing this for, geez, decades. And so many guests on the show, they make a great case to eat more plants for better health. And why do you think this advice may be misleading? And how should people approach plant-based eating more cautiously when these, quote, experts are telling them to eat the things that you say not to?
Yeah, this is a really big issue that we trust this, what has become now mainstream. All the media has adopted this idea that plant-based is better. We've created a big fantasy that somehow we're going to save ourselves from climate change and global warming, and we're saving ourselves from all things at the same time. And we're ignoring all the evidence to the contrary. I mean, even the royal family in England is gone very plant-based. The king and his daughter-in-law, and they're both quite sick with health problems and big swollen fingers and just not the picture of health at all. And you can see this again over and over again if you're willing to take what reality is showing us. But humans like to believe in our stories, and we're telling ourselves a story that gets kicked off from lots of different directions. And ultimately, there's a profit incentive that keeps that story alive.
Right. Now, you mentioned no almonds. What about almond milk? Is it the same issue with oxalates, or is it a little bit diluted and less of an issue?
Yeah. So isn't that a great question? You just have a few almonds in that container of almond milk you're buying, because it's mostly they're selling you water and thickeners and flavors and fillers and so on. You think, okay, so that's less almonds and that's better. But in a way, it might be worse. And that's because oxalate that's getting into your blood is the ion. This is a little dissolved, little tiny chemical. Oxalate is a 2-carbon chemical with 4 oxygens on it. It's quite uber small. It has a charge on it. That's what gives it the power to grab calcium and become calcium oxalate. That little thing, now it's floating in water. And it floats with the water between the cells of your gut and gets into your blood more easily. So you've facilitated the oxalate by turning it into almond milk and its ability to get into your system.
What about it? The one I have to bring up is beets, the superfood for the heart. It's touted for boosting nitric oxide. Everybody says to get the beet powder and the beet juice and so forth. What's your opinion? Should beets be avoided?
Well, it depends on the context. And I personally like sauna for increasing nitric oxide. I think that works perfectly well. So does an active lifestyle. So does getting outside and, you know, getting your whole lifestyle can be more important than putting beets as medication kind of mentality. We love the add a medication and buy a product to solve our problems, a sort of buying solution instead of the, I mean, self-discipline solutions are harder, right? But the beet, the oxalate issue is not a zero diet. This is not like an allergy. This is a toxicity. And the body knows about oxalate. So you can have some. And like I mentioned earlier, you even want to keep some in the diet. So beet may be something you want to keep in your diet for a while and maybe indefinitely if you can get away from the sweet potatoes and the quinoa and the buckwheat and the bran and the spinach. The main ones really for a lot of people are spinach and the nuts. And the darn chia seeds. If you can deal with those, there's room for bits of these foods that have some oxalate in them.
Interesting. I'm curious, what does the research say about the connection between oxalates and chronic health problems?
You have to understand that they haven't directly recognized beyond the kidney for about 70 years. We've been focusing all our financial investments and research on oxalate to be about the kidney stone. And that's real unfortunate because the literature started in the 1820s, and this is a diagnosis of eating too much oxalate and creating a health problem, came out in 1842, I believe it was. And for about 100 years, we knew that eating too much oxalate made certain people neurotic and had intestinal problems and had pain and connective tissue problems. And if you change the diet, you could help them. And they were able to help themselves to some degree, even in an era when we didn't have the chemistry to be very precise in how to measure it in a complicated thing like food. So we didn't know in the 1800s that potatoes and tea were high in oxalate, but they knew that rhubarb was. That was an obvious one. And that was what was really making people sick, because there was a huge fad and love of rhubarb amongst people who could afford it. In the late 1800s, it was a big deal in England where this came from. So the literature often, before today's sort of mercenary era, where it's all about getting your funding, getting your tenure, and justifying your research dollar because you're going to develop a product, it's the older research is actually more to the point and honest. And a lot of that hasn't been followed up on. So what I had to do to understand what we see clinically, like with your patient who can change her diet and miraculously solve a major issue she struggled with, is that you can see it in the basic research. It's been there all along, showing that it causes mitochondrial damage, cell damage. Newer research demonstrates within 40 minutes of a spinach smoothie, your immune system is now broken. Basically, your circulating immune cells are now broken, unable to fight infection, and are putting out pro-inflammatory cytokines. So you increase your inflammation within 40 minutes of a spinach smoothie, which is quite the opposite of what the story is being sold to us.
So would that be how it helps with pain? Like my patient had chronic pain, much, much better after doing the protocols. How does reducing oxalates in the diet help pain?
Oh, it's so interesting. There's so many mechanisms that's affecting the pain. One way is that the connective tissue becomes unstable and weaker. So you get various connective tissue problems where the joints and things now sort of spread, and that sort of stress in the joints creates pain. That was what was causing my foot pain all those years, is that the strength of all the various arches, this really interesting connective tissue architecture in a foot that allows you to use it the way we do with all pounding them all day long with body weight. When the connective tissue isn't acting right, that creates pain. The other way you create pain is that the oxalate being damaging the membranes, the mitochondria, and stealing the electrolytes from nerves, it's a nerve toxin. So the nerves get stuck in this on setting, and that can create direct nerve pain and neuropathies. You can also cause muscle spasms because the on status of a nerve causes muscles to contract, and you can get fibromyalgia knots. You can get all kinds of dysmotility in the digestive system that might be chronic diarrhea, chronic constipation, bloating, and you know where this organization of peristalsis is mixed up. And so things are moving in the wrong direction. You can get hypertension and hypotension because, again, it's affecting the muscle cells and the vascular tissue. And it goes on and on. You get emotional pain too. There's a lot of neuroinflammation will create apathy, anxiety, anger, irritability, potentially depression. That's another form of pain that goes with the nerve damage.
Yeah. Share, if you can, a few components of your program for safely reversing oxalate overload.
Well, the first thing is to step back and think about your health issues that you're struggling with and your diet that you've had over the past. And then look and see what's still in your diet that is amongst these high worst offender foods. Have your list of the 4 or 5 or maybe 10 of them if you're into turmeric and the whole deal, and start picking them off one at a time. So if you're a real fan of either almonds or spinach, start reducing that and pulling that down, and just take your time and find different ways to feed yourself and really do it in a way where it doesn't disrupt your lifestyle too much. It doesn't disrupt your microbiome. It's not too disruptive generally in your life. So you can do that gradually. But you want to support the body in the mineral depletion that's been caused by this situation and in the tendency to be acidic in your metabolism. So we try to address the minerals, make sure there's enough salt. When there's oxalic acid ions in your bloodstream, you're at risk of something called hypocalcemia, which is too little calcium in your blood. And with not enough calcium in the blood, setting you up for lots of potential problems, including osteoporosis, a general acidity, but also heart arrhythmias and things that feel like stroke. And you can end up with heart palpitations and end up in the emergency room with a electrolyte crash because oxalates are moving out of your tissues again, and you've got more oxalic acid back in the bloodstream coming from your tissues.
Interesting. I'm curious, what are the most common diseases or conditions you've seen go into remission and get fully cured by eating low oxalate diet? Is IBS one of those? Does IBS get, that is one.
Yes, it is. Although I don't think it's often the first one. I've had one of my surprises, and I talk about several examples in the book. There's a woman I met through my yoga studio, and she was despairing to me that she couldn't stay in a 90-minute class because she'd have to run to the bathroom because she has chronic fecal incontinence. She's basically getting random diarrhea. She cannot feel it when it's coming, and it can be happening, and she doesn't even know it's occurring. That was happening 10 times a day for years. And her condition was getting worse as she became more calcified. They ended up taking out her gallbladder. They found calcifications all through her pelvis. And she was just getting now kidney stones because they did not understand her problem with oxalate poisoning. She'd been living on almonds and chocolate mixed with nuts and mixes. And she moved to sweet potatoes. And she, as her problems came on, she thought it was gluten and dairy. She got rid of the dairy. That takes away the calcium from the diet that sets you up for much higher absorption of oxalate and makes your whole diet more oxalate toxic when you eliminate a high calcium food. Dairy is the main highest calcium food we have in the human diet. So that's significant that we teach people to go on gluten-free and dairy-free when they're starting to get sick, and that sets them up for very high consumption and very high absorption of oxalate. And she was an example of that. Within 3 days of me teaching her this, she texted me and said, "I'm not in the bathroom." She was completely cured from her, fecal incontinence in 3 days.
That is awesome. Talk to us about mental and emotional well-being. I'm seeing so many patients suffering from depression, ADD. Do oxalates impact mood and brain performance?
Absolutely. And right from the get-go, from the day you're born, it can affect your learning, your mood, your ability to follow directions. In function as a child, you could be prone to tantrums and being an unreasonable child because of this problem. And unfortunately, parents are giving their newborns or the weaning child are getting things like mashed sweet potato and mashed beets and pretty high oxalate foods nowadays. They're even putting quinoa in these baby foods. So it's affecting us at every stage of life. It's especially concerning for learning, growing children. But I really was unaware until I started really working with people and being public in my teaching, where people came to me and said, "My lifetime of anxiety for 30 years, I've been in counseling every week for anxiety. After 1 month of doing your thing, Sally, I don't need counseling. I am perfectly fine. I have no anxiety anymore." And we see this with apathy. We see this with lots of things. Now, not everyone gets quick results like that, and they'll struggle with their sleep and this and that. And how we each respond to the diet is very individual, how this is affecting us both as we're unawarely poisoning ourselves over the years and as we're attempting to undo this poisoning. How it plays out is highly personal.
So true. What's the typical diet for you? What do you follow? Are you a carnivore diet fan, paleo?
Well, one of the problems that oxalate causes is it fills you up with nano and micro crystal particles that irritate your immune system. And someone like me, who's also from a family that tends to have allergies, had poor reactions to all the vaccines. So my system, between the crystals and the vaccines, I have an immune system that is not happy about anything on this planet. So my diet is very customized to what I can eat. I'm a big fan of putting animal products back in the diet. If people are opposed to that for whatever reason, it's not a requirement. You can still help yourself feel better and get over gout and arthritis and all kinds of problems, even if you stay vegan. The problem is, if you really want full vitality, I really think you need more nutrients than plants are able to deliver. And you're going to be starved of protein and many important other nutrients if you insist on that. But it's not a requirement to take advantage of the new awareness of oxalate.
Right. Interesting. I'm curious. We talked about the superfoods that we've debunked and they're not superfoods. Is there a superfood in your opinion? What is like the go-to if you're on a deserted island? What is your, hey, that's the food we need? Is there a specific one that truly is the title of a superfood?
Well, imagining one single food as that superfood is a little bit of a stretch. You know, if I have a really sick patient who cannot digest anything at all, I like a nice undercooked, runny, or even raw egg yolk because they can digest that in a heartbeat and start getting nutrition. We can get them to the point where they can eat. So things like that. Butter has really got a lot of power in it. Small amounts of organ meats, fatty meats are all good. Those are all in the department of superfoods.
Interesting. We've about 2 minutes left. Anything that you'd like to chat about that we didn't cover today from your book, Toxic Superfoods, or any other takeaways for the listeners?
Well, I think it's important to understand that this is not understood by the vast majority of people out there, especially in the clinical world. So if you're going to go to your doctor and ask for them to validate this information, you're going to not get that.
Right.
You need to be willing to take the time to think about this well, to take a good look at what I'm teaching in my book. That was years of research from a very experienced, qualified researcher pulling this out only because I knew you couldn't find this information elsewhere. So really be willing to give it some time and let it percolate because you know someone in your life that needs this badly. They have kidney stones, they have arthritis, they have mood problems, they're having trouble learning, they're struggling, and they don't know what to do. And this is such an easy fix. It really is worth knowing about. So there's that. But the bigger issue is that once you're aware of this and learning, you have to remember that if you're filled up with toxic particles, that creates a long problem that can last a decade. So if you think you can get better in 3 or 6 or 9 months, you're not understanding this problem.
Right. Plus, I'm a big fan of elimination diets. And if you eliminate something and you feel better, probably it was that. I mean, right? Forget the science, the research. I mean, how can you tell someone, no, that's not the answer? Well, I feel great and I'm off of... Right.
Imagine that, like real life experience and yes. Logic ought to come up to the top of your thinking.
It's so true. It's like, wait a minute, what does Harvard say? Forget Harvard. How do you feel? Yeah. You really care about Harvard people you don't know? How do you feel? So that's really interesting. That's great. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. You shared such fascinating information. When I heard about this, I got to have you on the show. This is fascinating. The book is called Toxic Superfoods, How Oxalate Overload is Making You Sick and How to Get Better. And her just released the data companion to Toxic Superfoods. And to get your copies or to learn more, go to sallyknorton.com. And while there, be sure and check out the resources that she has available, including healthy recipes, articles, and videos. And you can follow Sally on Instagram at SK Norton, on Facebook, Be Free to Thrive, and on X, she's at Better Low Ox, O-X. You can follow me on Facebook and X at Dr. David Friedman. On Instagram, I'm at Dr. D. Friedman. And if you heard Sally say something today that somebody you know needs to hear, I'm sure you did, send them a link to this podcast. It's available to yourgoodhealthradio.com and radiomd.com. And peruse our podcast library and share these segments with friends and family, coworkers, and on social media. This information is too important. Stop keeping it to yourself. As I always say, sharing is caring. You can also subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.